Welcome to Shovel Talk, a podcast for economic developers from your friends at the Golden Shovel Agency.
Hello and welcome back to Shovel Talk. We've been MIA for a bit, breaking a cardinal rule in podcasting of staying consistent with your schedule as far as your pods dropping. Just to reintroduce myself, since we've been gone for a while, I am Darren Varley, VP of Client Retention and Creative Services here at Golden Shovel. We are excited to be back. We have a great discussion with one of the titans of economic development here in the Midwest, Shannon Landauer of the Iowa Lakes Corridor. But first, as usual, where in the world is Amanda?
Hey, Darren. So yeah, I actually am home now in California, but I had a pretty crazy last couple of months. So I was based in Warsaw, Poland for about 2.5 months. I actually just got back home on Friday, but I basically every other weekend would go visit a different country. So I went to Oktoberfest in Munich, which was really, really neat. I also visited Krakow, Poland. I visited Prague for a friend's birthday. That was very cool as well. And Vienna, Austria. Eastern Europe quickly became my favorite part of Europe, which was surprising. I really thought Western Europe was going to be, but Eastern Europe is so, so beautiful. And the history is just really neat to learn about. And yeah, so it's been a pretty amazing couple months, but I'm excited to be home with family and spending the holidays here. So that is where I am in the world.
Okay, thank you, Amanda, and safe travels on your way back to the States. Now let's get to our pod and introduce Shannon Landauer, friend, advocate, and client of Golden Shovel. Take it away, Bethany.
All right, Shannon, thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation and learning more about your background and really what gets you excited about economic development.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. I actually maybe took a non-traditional path to economic development, but I think many of us in the field could say the same. My training was actually in health information management, but when I was done with my schooling, I think there was one position open in the community at the time, and that was in an economic development office. And honestly, so quickly, I realized that it really was where my heart was at. I grew up in a rural community. I was living in one at the time, the town that my husband grew up in. And you just got to see how much of an impact you could have on so many people. And we get to do different things every day. And so just really quickly realized how much of a perfect fit it was for me.
I love that. And I think that you're right. When it comes to economic development, so many people we speak with don't initially go to school for it, maybe aren't even fully aware of what economic developers do. But I think the industry has a way of finding people who really are that perfect fit. Now, you said that you started working in a rural community, and that was at the Boone County Development Agency, correct?
Yes, in Albion, Nebraska. I started there at the beginning of 2005. Actually, my very first month on the job was when the construction crews mobilized for our ethanol plant there. So I kind of got thrown in really quickly and got to see construction and how that true recruitment process worked. And it was a lot of fun. But yeah, being rural, I think that it's really special, the work we do. I love to debate with some of my metro colleagues and even some of those larger metros across the country. We love to discuss the differences between, you know, those larger entities and their opportunities in that they get to specialize. You know, you're working in one piece of development every day, where rural practitioners, we work in a little bit of everything all the time because we have such small teams and small areas that we're serving.
That's a really good point. And I think it's almost like you have to become a jack of all trades, right? You mentioned construction and learning about development right away. That's not something you would necessarily get involved in quickly if you were working for a much larger urban organization.
Right. You're spot on with that. You know, it's really changing too, what skill sets are needed. And I think post-pandemic, economic development was changing anyway, But it's really a lot different environment. You know, we became a great connector to resources. And, you know, a lot of us realized how much we had to know, but at the same time that we could only know bits of it. We had to know how to connect people with the right resources. And things are paced so much differently now. It's much more rapid information, rapid process timelines. So it really is good being used to being in a lot of different things all at the same time. So it isn't quite so overwhelming.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm just going to use this as a quick plug for anyone listening who might be interested in economic development. Shannon brings up such good points that if you're looking for a career where you are not doing the same thing over and over again every day, rural economic development is definitely a very fascinating industry where you get to try your hand at many things.
That is so true. Just in October, we were celebrating Manufacturing Month. And, you know, the great diversity of companies that we're touring and that we're involved with. And even within one industry sector, all of our projects look so different. There's repetition of process, but not repetition of projects. It's so different all the time. I think too, one of the things in rural, you know, we're starting to get pulled into more of those things that I previously would have defined as community development. We know it's all secular, everything connects to the next piece, but you know, if you really want your existing industries to be successful, it's workforce. Workforce needs housing and childcare, and those conversations are constantly held. But when it comes to the work we do under those topics, our job isn't to have conversations about the challenges. Our job is to break down the challenges and figure out how you solve those things. Because every specific step that you're taking is a process. It's a long game, but it has to happen. And so really being kind of diagnostic with approaches and problems that communities and companies have is something that you just have to learn over time, because there's no playbook on that.
That is such a good point. And it's kind of like you said, even though your processes might be the same, each situation is different. So you can't necessarily apply the same solution to company B that you applied to company A.
Yes, exactly.
So it's interesting because you have seen really firsthand what it means to work at very, very small communities. As you mentioned, you started out in Boone County, and then, you know, you went to Carroll County, and now you're really working in an entire region. So you've really had some different roles and different experiences, which I think can add a lot of insight to this role. And I was hoping you could tell people about the differences in your perspective of working just for one community versus working for the benefit of an entire region.
I would say, and part of what attracted me to the position is the different challenge that, you know, I transitioned in Carroll. It was such a great area. My work was to do chamber and economic development. And while it was really important for me to do that and understand the role and the functions that a chamber plays, this role gave me the opportunity to get back all in economic development. But I think that my vision for economic development, especially in rural areas, is that it's definitely not getting easier. And I think that the more that we focus on partnerships and play on each other's strengths, the better. You know, it's easy to kind of be in your own little bubble, and you have to look outside. You have to understand the industry, what's happening across the state. But even more broadly, if we want to compete for people and for projects, we have to know truly what the competition looks like. And like I said, some of these rural economic development entities that are you know, maybe just a staff of one or two, and sometimes just one part-time person, it is really challenging to have the availability of resources that you need to be effective. So in my opinion, one of my real priorities as an economic developer is to help people grow and connect people with what their steps are. So as I mentor people and talk with some new economic developers, I guess a quick sidebar, I'm just coming off the year as president of Professional Developers of Iowa. And my priority really is to reach out and know the members and let them know that there is a great mentorship network. And it's a great profession to grow in. But, you know, as we do that, you really look at what resources are going to be available and how we really can help each other be stronger. I think that, again, looking at regionalism, it's really the approach that has to be taken, because that way we're able to reach a broader audience. You know, in a four county region, I'm not selling a town of 11,000 with one industrial site and one high school. I am selling four counties. We have everything from Buena Vista University. We've got several hospitals that are doing great things. Our high schools have great programming that is on-site learning projects. We also then have that balance, that work-life balance that people tend to be looking for post-COVID, with the lakes and the trail systems and the hunting and all of those things. So when I can sell a region of 65,000 people versus a community of 11,000, we can play at a whole different level and punch above our weight class. So I think that's a little bit what attracted me to the region. I definitely want to again point out that it has its challenges. You know, you still have some of those internal competition factors to overcome. We're constantly educating about why a project is in one community, not another. And again, I think that the more you focus on relationships and education about economic development, you really can overcome those things fairly quickly.
Yeah, thanks, Shannon. And I actually was going to ask you about your role as president. So I'm glad you brought that up. So I have to follow this up with a little bit of a harder question. Yeah. And that's, you know, people tend to have one of two mindsets, right? That mindset where we can expand and we can create a bigger pie, mm-hmm. or we have a limited pie and we've really got to hold on to our slice. We can't risk letting anybody have a bite of our slice because then we'll have less. And I think that some of the challenge that we're seeing with regionalism is that some people they're really hard to convince that the pie can be expanded. So what do you say to people with that mindset?
Well, I think that they really are drawing themselves limitations. You know, they're thinking too small instead of thinking broadly. I think it kind of compares, you know, realistically, when we talk about counties, a lot of organizations are county-wide. Those are just invisible boundaries that were developed for transactions. And so, you know, we've worked on projects, even partnering with counties outside of our technical territory. And we've even had the Des Moines Metro, when they've worked on projects, when they need to look at workforce and regions, you know, they were reaching out to Carroll. And so really, it's the way that it has to happen, because that's the nature of the work. So if we want to get to grow, it's really reimagining our communities and reimagining what our limitations are. You know, one of our communities, we really were seeing some challenges with regard to, you know, workforce transportation. And when we hear these things from companies that our workforce is faced with, really quickly, you start to find themes, and then you just have to get the people around the table, and they realize how powerful those conversations are. So whether it be one community bringing their companies together, us bringing together our communities and counties, or whatever the scenario may be, you know, it all just starts with that first conversation. And so quickly you realize the impact that you can have by working together. So I guess to kind of land that plane, I would say that we would rather show them than tell them. So, you know, we love to have examples we can point to, and, you know, different examples throughout the state too, of partnership and how powerful it can be to work with other people.
Yeah, I love that point. You know, show people how you've had success versus just trying to convince them. And we have seen a lot of success, obviously, throughout the country when people do take some of this regional approach. And it's interesting because there's more than one way to do it. I mean, obviously, the organization itself can become a regional organization. Or like you said, you can sometimes just reach out, cross those invisible barriers, and connect with counties or resources that are nearby or adjacent to you. And it sounds like you guys have been able to do that very successfully.
Yeah, you know, we've always been very open. That's the approach I've taken. I'm not going to tell a neighboring county or leader, no, we cannot help you. We find ways that we can play support roles, even if they're not direct. So I think that's always helped. And, you know, to I don't want to sound like an ego here, so bear with me. But the reality is, when you have the resources of multiple counties coming together, you can buy a bigger, stronger professional staff. You can buy those software tools that you need to compete. That can't be done with the dollars we'd be talking about as individual counties and rural areas. And so I don't really see it as an option. I see it as a necessity for communities and counties to thrive going forward, especially in the rural communities. We've seen some shifts nationally. I think people are taking different looks at moving out of metros and exploring other lifestyles. You know, the low-hanging fruit there is people that have left small communities, maybe take a look at coming home. But you have to tell your story, and that takes resources, whether it be businesses or people, and you just can't go it alone anymore. So I'm a huge advocate of regionalism, and I guess I'll continue to stand strong in that and put my money and my time where my mouth is.
As you obviously have by serving as president this year and helping to mentor other economic developers. Now, one of the things that you mentioned a few minutes ago is how, obviously, in the Iowa Lakes corridor, you are able to offer that quality of life that people are really searching for, especially post-COVID, you know, having access to outdoor recreation, good schools, hospitals, things of that nature. Now, you yourself, talking about putting your money and time where your mouth is, also are a transplant to the region. So could you tell us a little bit about your experience in relocating and why you think that people should take a chance on doing it?
Yeah, you know, I can say firsthand that housing thing is certainly not overstated. That's a challenge, especially in rural areas. So, you know, when you begin to look at your next step and what's a fit for your family, it all came together so well for us. We loved this area. Again, we're kind of outdoorsy. We love the lake. My husband fishes and hunts and all of that stuff. And my kids love sports and being involved and being able to be multi-sport athletes and in lots of activities. And so through our process, we actually found that one of the smaller communities was a great fit for us. The class sizes are pretty small. Again, our kids are very, very active. But you know, this summer, I was always one that thought, you know, staycation, I kind of questioned that. And how well is that going to work as a marketing tool in these vacation areas and rural areas? But I mean, honest to goodness, every single weekend this summer, we had something fun to do, whether it be concerts at the lake or, you know, Spencer's got car shows and activities going on. Buena Vista University is hosting events and fun things. And so the beauty of an area like this is that every community has its own personality and its own things that you can get involved with. Estherville is doing some of the coolest work with activating their waterways and their river system, you know, just different access points and improving that. So whatever your interest, there really is a community that's a fit for you. So like I said, we're not, you know, we're not people that are concert goers and stuff like that. That really hadn't been our priority, but here it's just part of the lifestyle. It's so exciting to get to do all of that. So it kind of does, you know, you work hard and you put everything you can into your professional life. And then it's truly like living on vacation in this area of Iowa.
And who doesn't love living on vacation? I think that's great. And, you know, it is interesting because I have also moved with our family. We moved from the West Coast to the East Coast to the Midwest, back to the East Coast. So I know that it's a huge transition for families. And sometimes it can be a little bit intimidating to know really where to start that relocation journey. Do you feel that economic development organizations could play a role at all in supporting relocation?
You know, I think that we are a great bridge. In this area, our chamber directors do such a phenomenal job. I mean, they've got such a pulse on the businesses, on housing, on education, the faith community. You know, a lot of our small communities too have Main Street programs that are super active. So it's really a great way, you know, what again, I'll say that economic developers have really become such strong connectors that whatever those hesitations may be, there's somebody we know in the community that is going to give them the VIP treatment. One example we had, you know, as I mentioned, people are taking different looks at where they live. And I think that relates to a whole lot of things. But we've had families that have found this area kind of organically. They didn't come from here. They just decided it was time to get out of the metro they were in. And so there are people looking to buy businesses even. They, you know, maybe they previously hadn't been a business owner, but they're ready for that next chapter. So it really comes back to marketing and telling your community story so that people really understand what to expect. But again, just having a team of people that can be very helpful in that transition is really huge. Someone to call when there's a challenge versus having to get online and try to Google a solution.
Which can be hard in rural communities. I mean, that's a lot of what we do at Golden Shovel is help rural communities to tell their stories, because very often there just isn't a lot of information available online. I know we're also seeing trends in tourism, chambers, economic development, all working together to provide some of that relocation information. It sounds like your chambers are already doing a really incredible job of that. For communities that might be a lot smaller than yours, what do you think economic developers could do at minimum, I guess, to support that workforce recruitment effort?
So smaller communities, again, they have their own identities. And so really helping them, you know, we've even got some that don't have a website or don't have a chamber. And so making sure that they have a presence is really important. In some cases, they have decided that they're going to be a housing solution for those larger communities, and they found success that way. Another community that we have, they have got a volunteer group of economic development committee that is working on, they've renovated a building on the main street. And so, you know, they're just helping keep that momentum going and making sure that they're a great stop that people need to consider. So again, we like to really help identify some challenges and goals and then connect to resources. One story I'll share with you, one of our mayors actually bought a grocery store in a very small town in this area right at the onset of COVID. And so, you know, he's doing great things in a lot of directions. He's got lots of things going on, but sometimes it's just us connecting him even with another grocery store owner I knew, so that they can talk shop a little bit. And he, again, has like a mentorship opportunity and can run ideas by someone. So it isn't just always the typical project work of financials and marketing and sites and buildings. It really is that people element that can help us to provide that top-notch level of service, whether it be individuals or businesses.
That is such a good point. And I know that one of the things that we see is economic developers sometimes struggling because there is never enough dollars to go around. And at times that can be discouraging, feeling like it limits your impact. But to the point you just made, sometimes it doesn't take capital to always help solve problems. Sometimes it's making those connections. So I'm glad you brought that up. Another question that I had for you is really more corridor specific. For those that are outside of Iowa, you may not have heard of the Iowa Lakes Corridor. So it is a little bit of a hidden gem, so to speak. What would you like people to know about your region?
Oh my goodness. Our region just has so many neat things going on. Again, from the concentration of manufacturing and industries that we have going on that are very unique and selling globally. One company that we'd love to talk about is Veridian. You know, they make the suits for firefighters, so they're shipping all over the place. And so many of the things that are happening here really provide pride in ownership and workmanship of our workforce locally. You know, they're not just making a product to send along. They understand the important things that are happening with their products. You know, we also, again, I kind of point to that destination, but Okoboji is a lot of fun. Again, we see people from all over the area. Some decide to make it a 3-month stay, some decide to make it a lifetime stay. And again, Estherville and that area in Emmett County is just, it's beautiful up here. So I think too, we have such a concentration of those that are interested in the entrepreneurial culture. We started the Okoboji Entrepreneurial Institute. I believe this was our 16th year. this summer, and we have made some slight adjustments and watch it evolve. But the universities in Iowa all support it. We bring out some of the best and brightest students in the university systems, and they get the opportunity to pitch ideas. They get to meet with entrepreneurs that are in the Lakes area. Again, they've had successful lifetimes of company ownership, and really have that one-on-one mentorship opportunity. It's just 35 is the most kids we've had. And so they're seeing that, you know, they'll go away from the Entrepreneurial Institute. They'll go do what they're going to do with their life. Many of them end up on Wall Street or wherever because they are very talented young people. But we've also seen some of them make the call to say, hey, we want to come back. And recently we had a young man that bought a company in the area with the help of some of those OEI mentors. So, you know, it's really an area where we're thriving. The culture for business growth is thriving. And it's something that just can't be replicated everywhere.
That's really an interesting story. I would love to learn more about that business. So, you know, you said that those mentors are really just able to help and support students. Are there also mentorship opportunities or connection opportunities for adults who, like you said, may be looking to start a business for the first time?
Yes, we have got quite a list of those mentors, and it's really categorized. You know, it's business owners, it's lenders, it's marketing firms, so that whatever that challenge may be, or as a company is looking to start or maybe even grow, maybe they're making decisions on their path forward, there are people that can provide assistance and conversation. There's a couple of them here in Spencer that they're kind of just like our coaching dream team, right? So someone comes in, they have an idea, there might be a few things to work out. We take them to lunch and we just sit down, and those guys kind of go through their process, and really people come out stronger. And it's just so neat to have people circle back later and say, hey, I need to talk to that individual again. And you get to see the relationships building. And I mentioned earlier, I just think that the relationship building is truly the fundamental strength for us. And again, up here, people enjoy friendships. We have that Lakes relaxed culture in Iowa. So we see a lot of success from just sit at the table and talk about it.
That's awesome. And I think it's really a cool thing to have programs like that in place, especially when all over the country, you know, there's the concern of people retiring and leaving their small businesses and the potential impact that'll have on the community if they're not purchased by somebody else.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It really is neat too to see. One of the things that maybe has surprised us a little more, exactly as you talked about the retirements that are coming, but we're also seeing people that are just saying, you know, it's time to slow down a little bit. I want to step out of that 8 to 5, that type of schedule, and own a business. So some of the projects we're seeing are kind of that second career or third career and taking a step into that entrepreneurship space. So lots of cool things that are happening. And just recently, you know, Spencer had announced that for the first time in years, our downtown buildings were full. And, you know, in Storm Lake, we're seeing lots of things with diversity and with company growth and housing development. And so, again, every community just kind of has their own vibe and they're going strong.
That's awesome, Shannon. You know, one of the things I wanted to explore with you is really based on some of this volunteer work that you've been doing at the state level. You know, we've talked a lot about the corridor and some of the good trends you're seeing, for example, having all of your space full. I mean, that's fantastic. Is there anything that you're seeing that's a best practice that you'd like to give a shout out for another community in Iowa?
I don't know. It's just so hard. So many of the economic developers here are so good at taking individualized approaches. You know, they really are digging in and understanding their community needs and their community assets. I look at Josh Larrabee and the work that they've done with childcare, because childcare is really critical need. And I guess that's one thing that really stands out to me was his approach. But geez, I feel like there's probably 100 examples I could give you. So yeah, Josh Larrabee is in Fairfield, Iowa, and he's the example that everyone points to in terms of childcare. And really, again, it's just like they decided to hit it in the forehead and just dig in and make it happen. So That one's really cool. It stands out to me. The state put forward some grant dollars to do childcare studies, and then they went further and put some dollars out there so that businesses who are willing to invest in childcare can receive some funding to support those efforts. So they're really helping to kind of bridge the gap between business and community to make sure everyone's communicating, everyone's really understanding the issues together and at the same time and taking a more cohesive approach at solving those challenges. So I have to applaud the state for really making those funds a priority and helping our communities to tackle those issues.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Shannon. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that the state of Iowa is actually helping businesses to get money to build their own childcare facilities. Is that correct?
So if businesses come to the table, and it's a pretty new program, we have not used it yet either. And I believe it's still kind of some of the end of the COVID dollars for the state of Iowa. We have a balance of things remaining. So it's not going to be a long-term program, but yes, my understanding is that if a company needs to be the applicant, and so they can apply for funds that are going to support these initiatives, we're really researching. We hadn't been all in on childcare. We really left that more at the community level, but we're trying to help provide some framework for things for them. But yes, it's through Iowa Economic Development Authority.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, it's such an important issue. I know everyone's curious about anything at all that's even in the genesis, beginning phases on childcare is super interesting to economic development right now. So Shannon, I know you mentioned how important mentorship is in economic development. I couldn't agree more. And I'm wondering if you had a mentor either in economic development or maybe in your youth that really helped inspire and guide you.
So as I mentioned, my first job out of college was economic development. Ironically, that office opened in November of 2001. So actually just after I graduated high school. So I felt like not only was I new in development, but the office was new. And so we were growing the organization at the same time and growing that countywide partnership. But I would say I actually had three board members in that role that, you know, I started at the entry level and worked my way up in that organization. I had had a couple leaders before I had that executive director role, and they really had more confidence in me than I had in myself at the time. They just saw that inquisitive nature that I had and that ability to really dig into problems. And not only that, coming from a rural area, they saw that my passion point was really helping rural communities to survive. So while I didn't think I was ready to be an executive director, they did. And they really helped me grow, helped me understand not just economic development, but some of that structure piece of it, you know, those partnerships, those budget pieces, and things like that. So still today, I talk to them often when I'm back home or in the area. Certainly when there's elections going on, I love to text them and poke at them a little bit. But, you know, some people have those formative figures in their high school or even elementary school years. For me, it really was more of those individuals helping me understand the impact I could have. And, you know, that just sitting quiet at the table wasn't the right approach. You really got to be thoughtful, but you also need to, when it's time to talk, you got to talk. I'm more of those two ears, one mouth. That's definitely the approach I take, but I would say they were the ones that I've looked up to. They're company leaders. They've had their ups and downs as well. All very, very successful people. And, you know, sometimes the best examples and leaders aren't the gentle ones. Sometimes they lead pretty strongly, and that really helped me out as well.
So I think something you said there was really a great point, and that's that they saw things in you before you even saw them in yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that mentors tend to be really good at. Now, do you feel like we need to do a better job in the industry of helping to identify new leaders, or do you feel like that's something that's just naturally happening?
No, I really do think it needs to be an awareness on each of our parts. You know, we have to have our eyes open. It's really easy to just, you know, stay in your circles and do the things that we've done. PDI, for example, we had to make some transitions that were not easy, but we are so much better because of it. And we are also better when we're inviting people to the table. You know, I love to talk with people, understand their roles and what they're good at. And you can even see it in their personalities, you know, what makes them tick and what parts of the work they get excited about. And so I think it's always important to be just, again, connecting those people. So when I meet a new PDI member or someone at the NREDA conference last week that maybe has a topic that's really important to them, we at least need to know who they can be connected with to help them with their goals. But again, you know, inviting people to the PDI boards or committees or getting them involved, I think people really underestimate how much value they can bring to conversations. And again, if it's just people that think like me around the table, we're not going anywhere.
Like you said, I mean, everyone really can also play a role in that mentorship possibility. So I'm wondering, do you see anything happening, I guess, at the state or national level that might be a best practice for helping to grow and educate economic development leaders that you could share with the wider audience?
I would say some of the most influential people as I grew up in economic development are the connections that I made at the Heartland Economic Development course that's here in the Midwest. In the OU EDI program, not trying to be a commercial for those specific organizations or events, but you know, when you spend a week learning with people, you work hard with them in the classroom setting, you're having meals, you're kind of sharing your battle stories. And when I decided to transition from Nebraska to Iowa, when I was looking at the Carroll position, the first phone calls I made were two people I went through Heartland with 7 years before that. So, you know, it really just speaks to how important it is to be out. So many things are going to that Zoom format, but when you really connect with people and it's not just a quick meeting, but you're spending more time and more valuable time with them, it's just really critical to be out. And again, I think that the education processes are evolving. So I think that the more people can be out and connect and learn and grow together, the more that they're going to be able to turn around and provide for others down the road.
Yeah, I agree. And thank you for sharing those insights. I know that you've been very successful at building these types of programs as well. So please tell the audience, how has Golden Shovel supported you in your economic development journey? I know we've worked with you at multiple organizations now.
You know, what I love most about this team is that it's personal too. You know, as I've said multiple times, I like to work with people that I know and that I trust, and I care about them beyond the work that we do together. And so it's just great to have people that you can count on, that you can kind of, oh man, throw ideas at. And it's never a hard no. It's either a we'll get back to you or let's investigate that a little bit further. I think that's been my favorite part of it, is that the GSA team too, you don't just tell us what products you have and try to sell us. You're constantly evolving in your offerings and trying to keep a pulse on the industry while also being a thought leader in economic development circles. So I think that's why I, again, really appreciate it, is that when you have those deeper relationships, some of those conversations are a little more honest. I think that the great majority of your team would agree that we've had conversations about maybe it's new modules on the website or different approaches at things. And, you know, lots of idea shooting happens. And I think the company, you guys have always adapted that mentality too, of we're not just going, if we create a solution for Shannon and it's a good solution, it's available to our customers. We work as a team in economic development, not just as competitors.
And that's so true. We love finding best practices and sharing them. So I really appreciate that you see that that's the team approach, because we do always hope to provide you and any of our clients just with insights, tools, materials, as often as we can, because we know that we're going to rise together. At least that's our approach.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's been a pleasure working with you. All right, Shannon, you have answered some tough questions today and shared some really incredible insights. But now it's time to have a little bit of fun with our game. So as anyone who listens to our podcast knows, we are going to ask Shannon some rapid fire questions. She only has 2 minutes to answer, and we're going to see how many questions she can answer in those 2 minutes. So to help us, we're going to go to the man behind the curtain, Darren, who is going to time us and count us down.
All right, Shannon and Bethany, 3, 2, 1, go.
What book are you currently reading?
Birthdays by Danielle Steele.
What is your favorite podcast and why?
GSA, because a lot of my friends are on it.
What does your morning routine look like?
Sleeping in as late as possible, a quick workout, getting myself ready, getting my kids ready, chasing my dogs out of the house, and getting to work.
Favorite outdoor activity?
Boating.
Favorite vacation destination?
Panama City Beach.
What is your wig for next year, your wildly important goal?
I want to go to the Sugar Shack Festival in Montreal.
Ooh, that sounds interesting. I'll have to look that up. All right. What are 5 words that you would use to describe yourself?
Hilarious, intelligent, analytical, contemplative, and hardworking.
Love it. What is your favorite song?
Turn the Page by Metallica, not the Bob Seger version.
30 seconds.
Okay, now, Shannon, we gotta know, what is your most embarrassing outfit ever?
I was a clown for Halloween years 1 through 8. It's awful to see pictures of that, and clowns terrify me to this day.
Oh, yikes. So what do you do when you see a clown on Halloween?
I don't. I stay home.
All right. What was your favorite candy this Halloween then?
I love Snickers.
All right. Time is up.
Awesome. Thank you, Shannon. How many did she get in? I think that had to have been at least 10. I think you did pretty good.
I will go with 11.
It's kind of funny when you guys talk about goals, our minds are trained to think about work. And so, when it's personal, it's like, geez, what would I do?
Well, I think the fact that you got through it means that we definitely should be sending you a Snickers, and maybe you can eat it and be contemplative, since that's one of your words, about next year's goals.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Shannon, for your time today. I really enjoyed conversing with you, and I hope that everyone listening really gained some insight, and especially when it comes to regionalism and the importance of mentoring that next generation of economic developers.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm always happy to share what I can.
Thank you, Shannon, for that wonderful discussion and for being a Golden Shovel advocate for all these years. On to some Golden Shovel news. We do have 2 new hires that have come on within the past month. We have Michelle Schreiber and Spencer Ralph. Both have joined our sales team in some capacity. So welcome to the team, Michelle and Spencer. Golden Shovel social media accounts. Facebook, please like us at Shovel Toss. Twitter, follow us at Gold Shovel. LinkedIn, follow us at Golden Shovel. YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, Golden Shovel Agency. Also, a reminder, we always have great educational materials and information on our new website. You can check out our Resource Learning Center and check out our latest ebooks, podcasts, you're listening to one right now, and webinars. So we want to conclude 2022 with a bang. So we do have an upcoming podcast in the month of December leading into 2023, where we promise we will do a better job of staying on track. So everybody have a good rest of your day, and thank you for listening for the latest episode of Shovel Talk.